As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell.
And I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
And welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast, where every Wednesday, Flo and I pick out one article from all the brilliant writing available on The Athletic and put the authors under the spotlight.
This week, as the Premier League gears up for Cristiano Ronaldo's second debut at Manchester United, our United correspondent Laurie Whitwell is back on the show to talk about the 3pm blackout and how, unlike in 189 other countries around the world, fans here in England won't be able to watch the game legally.
Yeah, we're also going to hear from our resident EFL expert, my Friday co-host George Ellick's going to drop in and tell us a little bit about things from an EFL perspective. Plenty for us to talk about with this, Flo. It's a really, really interesting story and stuff with a lot of nuance to it, much more than I realised actually before we prepped for this podcast. But let's quickly talk about England. Let's start with Jude Bellingham. He's quite the player, isn't he?
Yeah, he was brilliant on Sunday night. I really enjoyed the game. I love Jesse Lingard. I just think he's so fun to watch. I think he looked like he was having such a good time. And that's so great to see. You know, a player doesn't get a lot of game time, just really enjoying every single time he steps on the football pitch. And I know everyone always says it, and it's such a cliche with Jude Bellingham. You know, he's only 18, blah, blah, blah. But the composure and the confidence of a player that young, and to just sort of boss the midfield like he did is just so impressive, and I'm so excited to see even more of him over the next few years.
Yeah, he's an absolute joke, and I know it was against Andorra, but I really think that Bellingham can do that against elite opposition as well, so I'm looking forward to seeing him develop in the next few years. We probably won't talk so much about Trent Alexander-Arnold in midfield. I don't think we'll be seeing that happen again for England, but remember, there's plenty of England stuff going on The Athletic, because obviously the Poland game's coming up tonight as well. If you aren't already subscribed, then you can sign up today and save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sport. So that's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. All you got to do is go to theathletic.com/footballpod and you'll be able to take advantage of that offer. Laurie, welcome back. A regular on our podcast now, second appearance. How are your excitement levels around Ronaldo's big debut on Saturday?
Yeah, I feel quite privileged because I'm going to the game at Old Trafford. It was actually a last minute substitution with Karl Anka. We had originally arranged for me to do the West Ham game away, which is the next weekend, and him to do the Newcastle home game. But then I realised I had a wedding the day before the West Ham game. So I said, can we swap? And then Ronaldo signed. So I feel quite lucky to be in the stadium, as we'll discuss, because it's a 3pm kickoff, so it's not on TV. But yeah, excited. He's obviously in Manchester, going to start training with the team, I think, tomorrow. So yeah, and I'm sure he'll be wanting to start that game. We'll see if Solskjaer picks him, but I would be surprised if he doesn't start the game.
Where do you think he will start? Because obviously I think he's probably been bought in as a centre forward, but there is also still talk that he could end up playing from the left, and that's where he wants to play. Do you know anything about where he may play?
I think up front, yeah. I mean, I know that you know, he's obviously played across the front line in his career, but more recently has been that centre-forward role. And Solskjaer, after the game against Wolves, was saying that he wants him in that penalty box, getting on the end of things, scoring the goals that obviously he's done for Juventus in the last three seasons, and he has done at ridiculous levels for Real Madrid before that. And Solskjaer's always sort of said that he wants a striker that would break his nose, break his toe to score a goal. He probably didn't really have that in Anthony Martial. He certainly had it in Edinson Cavani, and Ronaldo's cut from the same cloth. I know he obviously likes the way he looks, but I think he's certainly put himself in situations that might hurt to score a goal.
Laurie, in the piece, you talk about the fact that you touched on it there, that the game is at 3 p.m. and that means that people in the UK won't be able to watch it on TV. There was an opportunity to move it. You mentioned in the piece about the fact that there's precedent for games being moved fairly last minute previously, and we know that for away fans, often it's, you know, 2 weeks before you might be changing trains and stuff like that. So why do you think that the decision was made not to move this to a Sunday kickoff or a Monday night or, you know, a late Saturday game?
Yeah, I wonder if it was the timing of it all, that it sort of happened quite suddenly, and then to kind of quickly switch for the broadcasters, you know, Sky, to say, actually, we want that as a live game. Perhaps maybe there wasn't enough of an opportunity there for them. Also, they would argue rightly that, you know, there's no guarantee that Ronaldo's going to start the game, so they would perhaps rather like to wait and see. They've got the game away to West Ham the following weekend, so they feel satisfied that they've got, you know, Ronaldo, plenty of it coming up. That being said, you know, a lot of people will want to watch this game, and we have had a lot of comments on The Athletic sort of asking why it's not been shifted. The precedent was the Leicester game against Arsenal back in 2016, and that was a January fixture when Leicester were going for the title, and I think nobody could have predicted that they would be in the title race at that point. It was 23 days in advance that they shifted that one. So again, it was it caused a lot of criticism from away fans for the fact that they, you know, perhaps already booked their trains and or hotels, and it got shifted to a Sunday at 12. So it was a tricky one to get to for Leicester fans. So I think perhaps they've also been mindful of that, you know, Newcastle to Manchester, you know, you have got to consider people actually going to the game. And I guess they just thought, let's leave it as be.
Yeah, and also what I was saying to Dan when we were chatting on WhatsApp earlier before the pod, that I remember United Newcastle being one of the best fixtures of the season. I remember, you know, watching that in summer holidays in bars in kind of Portugal or wherever, and, you know, classics with Shearer and the like. So I was actually quite surprised that it wasn't picked for TV initially as one of the games that a broadcaster might want to pick up. Do you just think it's the nature of maybe a slightly sort of fading Newcastle side, and therefore it's not as a tantalising fixture as it once was?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it's been a pretty comfortable win for United, certainly last season. I mean, admittedly, it was Jose Mourinho's sort of do or die game almost that time, and that was a late comeback win, 3-2, so that's quite a recent memory. But yeah, back in the day, it used to be, I remember 4-3, a couple of them actually, that were really entertaining.
With Philippe Albert.
I guess this season, United were on away to Wolves last weekend, and they're on again away to West Ham. So I feel like perhaps the broadcasters are thinking, let's have United away from home. You know, perhaps, I know they're on this long unbeaten run, but there's more chance of a United defeat in those situations maybe. And you're looking at Man United v Newcastle at the moment, and you're thinking that should be an easy Man United win. So they're probably thinking that on that score, I would imagine.
I expect now, Laurie, you're at expert on Article 48. For those who don't know, do you want to explain a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I read about it a while ago in a Matt Slater piece. He's really on the ball with this kind of thing, and yeah. But this week I'd kind of done a bit more digging into it, and it's basically a statute as per sort of UEFA regulations where all member nations of UEFA can actually have a slot that's 2.5 hours where they don't show any live football on TV. The idea being it's to protect crowds at the game, so not only at Old Trafford but also at any local stadiums nearby, sort of lower league level. So Salford are playing at the same time at 3 o'clock, for example, that game. So would somebody, if the Ronaldo match was on TV, would they rather stay at home or go to the pub and watch that than go to Salford and watch their local team? And then also there is a sort of smaller perhaps angle to it, in that you know, some people play football at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, so the kind of grassroots protection is something that they're after. There was some suggestion that it dated all the way back to the 50s, but in doing my research for this, it transpired that it was 1987 when the law came into effect, which is basically when broadcasters were looking to show football on TV. In England, for example, it was ITV doing a big TV deal with the Football League, and they realised that they needed to have a sort of protected slot. And it was actually the broadcasters as well as the FA and the Football League that got together and decided about this 2:45 p.m. to 5:15 p.m. slot, where it's a blackout for matches to be shown in the UK, and it's just stood the test of time throughout all that period. And another angle actually that I hadn't really appreciated was that you can't show any football at that time. So it could be Bundesliga games, it could be La Liga games that you can't show in England. And that's already had an effect on one Ronaldo game when he was making his debut for Juventus away to Chievo. So that kicked off at 5 p.m. So the first 15 minutes of that game weren't allowed to be shown on English TV, which is kind of mad, I suppose. And La Liga tried to challenge it, or rather, sorry, 11 Sport tried to challenge it a few years ago, and basically UEFA and the FA pushed back and said no thanks, and they kind of went and accepted that. So it's a topic that's caused a lot of debate, and not many countries do it. You know, it's only actually England, Scotland, and I think Montenegro that actually enforce this. You know, every other country, they sort of show football throughout the day, throughout, you know, each week. Perhaps it looks archaic to some people, but for sure there's a lot of people that are very strongly opposed to it changing, you know, particularly up and down the Football League, you know, owners that really value gate receipts and people actually coming to the stadiums.
Yeah, I do get it. It's completely understandable. But I do remember tuning in when the La Liga used to be on Sky to watch El Clasico once, and just the first 15 minutes wasn't shown, and then missing two goals. It kind of takes away a little bit in that respect. I don't think it needs to be quite as long, because you don't want to be missing the first 15 minutes of a game. That makes no sense at all.
I also think, to echo that, it seems bizarre. I mean, I'm fully support it in the UK, but it seems bizarre to me to extend it to matches abroad, because, you know, if the focus is on gate receipts, I think there is a desire anyway to follow your team. And that's only been heightened because of the pandemic. I mean, I know from personal experience, people are absolutely desperate to get to football games. So I think extending it to a game that you can't physically get to, I just think, I think that maybe is a tad excessive when Dan's missing the first 15 minutes of El Clasico.
Not on at all. That would remember being very, very upset. Ruined the rest of the game for me, to be honest. I don't even think there was any goals for the rest of the game.
I think
they were the only goals. But yeah, I get what you're saying, Flo, because I would... I know, obviously, I support a Premier League team, but, you know, I'd never not go to Villa Park on the basis that there was another game on telly. But it is the grassroots level and the lower league level that I guess it affects.
Yeah, they've done some research into it, but clubs are very careful about opening Pandora's box. Is how Sean Harvey, who was the chief executive of the EFL, put it to me. They trialled. They tried to do a scheme where basically, this is another clause, sorry, of Article 48, where it actually only comes into effect if the top two divisions, if 50% of those games are staged at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. So during international week, obviously, top two divisions are paused, basically. So theoretically, there's no ban on the 3 p.m. blackout. You know, clubs could be shown at that time. But he proposed to League One and League Two clubs, shall we do that? Should we show some matches at 3 p.m. on a Saturday and see if it affects gate receipts or not? And the clubs basically pushed back on that. A few clubs did take them up on the offer. I think they had their on the iFollow app that they could show their games. And apparently there wasn't much conclusive evidence either way to say yes, this actually does really affect gate receipts or no, it doesn't. So I think clubs are kind of reluctant to sort of peek behind the door on that one.
And I suppose when you've got crazy away trips, when you're going like Plymouth to Carlisle or something like that, then, you know, you can understand why people might be a bit reluctant to do that. But I think probably one of the biggest concerns is ticket prices, isn't it? Because I went to that Arsenal-Chelsea game at Emirates a few weeks ago that didn't sell out. I think I paid 80 quid to go and... It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And I think maybe in the Premier League especially, and a lot of championship clubs as well, are not cheap. There must be a concern that if Pandora's box were to be opened, the ticket prices are pushing people away.
Yeah, and that was probably something that came through in research that Ampere analyst did. One of their analysts spoke to us about it, and he said that they looked at the Bundesliga, for example, and they show matches, you know, all the time. It's basically always available, and their attendances are over 90%, you know, which is equivalent to the Premier League, basically, which is, you know, really strong. But obviously, there's other factors there, such as ticket prices, you know, and the overall match day experience. So I think people are, you know, wanting to go. You know, beer is obviously readily available, for example. You know, you can make a proper day of it, and it wouldn't cost you an arm and a leg. Whereas if your ticket prices are excessive and you've got this alternative to stay at home and watch it, you know, in the comfort of your own home, and maybe the alternative would be to show certain matches on, you know, club in-house media where they could, you know, perhaps pay a certain premium for that. I think people would perhaps, that would be the issue, the ticket prices. But, you know, if it meant ticket prices coming down, I think we could all get behind that one.
Yeah, and Dan, we were talking about the fact that we're already spending maybe, I think I've got at least £50 to £60 a month going towards a BT Sport and Sky subscription. So with respect to the people that are commenting on your piece, Laurie, you can understand the frustration of people who say, I'm paying all this money and I still can't get to watch my football team. And we kind of had that limbo of the pandemic where you had the access, and there was that kind of hilarious moment where the Premier League tried to do pay-per-view again and it kind of backfired. And you had iFollow, which was a kind of about 10 quid a game. So things became far more accessible. And I suppose once you give people that and take it away, it's really hard to say, sorry, guys, no more of that, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Andy Cairns, who was the head of Sky Sports News, was another person we spoke to, and he very much came from that point of view where I think he would be up for everything being available and people can make their own choice if they want to go to a game. That's a different experience to watching it at home. But you are right, Flo, that, you know, the experience of the pandemic just gave people a window into an alternative reality where they could watch football all the time. And did they enjoy that? You know, I think certainly a lot of people had a great time. You know, I think, what was it, like 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, you could spend all day watching the football. Alternatively, which is something Sean Harvey mentioned, that, you know, the saturation point was, were the audience levels actually, you know, a good level throughout for those matches, or did people, you know, reach a point where actually they'd kind of got a bit of football burnout and they picked and chose what games they wanted to watch, and therefore perhaps the smaller club suffered as a result. So I feel like Article 48 does sustain a kind of more democratic spread of money throughout the Premier League and even, you know, down into the Football League.
I did find that they always seem to put a tedious game on at 3 o'clock. Like, I'd have in my mind that I'm going to spend all day on Saturday sitting in watching the football, and the 3 o'clock was always thrown in as a bit of a tedious one. I feel like they did that on purpose because of Article 48, because it was never a game you wanted to watch at 3 o'clock, I always felt.
Testing your resolve there, Dan.
Yeah, exactly.
Just always to like see it through.
West Brom Burnley.
And also that, you know, the having fans back lifts the coverage. I think we spoke about that in our first episode of this pod. Actually watching it during the pandemic, although it was brilliant to have the access, it wasn't the same without the fans. It was sometimes like watching a FIFA simulation. So now that fans are back, I think the TV experience is much better, and you can understand why people want more of that, because you're getting such good coverage. I mean, Mark Chapman, you spoke to him at the end of your piece, and he was talking about radio, and I completely agree with him. I think, you know, I do a lot of radio and I'm really passionate about radio. I think it's just such an incredible medium, and I agree with him in the sense that at Old Trafford on Saturday, he's so excited to bring people into that atmosphere, into that occasion. And maybe that's the kind of middle ground, I guess, is that you can't have the full 4D experience, but we can give you something and we can still protect the clubs. I guess with the bigger clubs like Manchester United, you would kind of shrug and say, well, maybe they'll just sell out anyway. So could you reach some kind of middle ground where the bigger clubs who are more global and are so big can have those 3 PMs, but the smaller clubs can't? You know, maybe like a Premier League exemption.
Yeah, a Premier League exemption is an interesting idea. And I think for sure, perhaps there's little opportunities, but, you know, maybe broadcasters could have, you know, one or two games per season where they could at short notice say, actually, we can broadcast this. They wouldn't change the time of the game, and they wouldn't, you know, so fans wouldn't be affected, that wouldn't be that upheaval, but they could perhaps for, you know, circumstances beyond prediction, such as Ronaldo signing, they could select it. I suppose the only caveat to that would be that would the clubs themselves then say, well, we're being shown more than you guys, we deserve more money. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there is the distribution that they have at the moment, the formula that they use to give money to teams that are shown on TV. So that already, you know, United, for example, or Liverpool will be on more than Burnley, just as a facilities fee that they get. So that would perhaps increase that gap a little bit. So I suppose that would be another thing to consider if they decided that they deserved more money. I mean, one thing that was said to me that could, you know, would this actually open up clubs looking to sell their own rights? And I mean, I've been told that, you know, that's not possible. You know, the Premier League statutes dictate that it's, you know, a collaborative sale of rights. So that's one thing just to kind of make sure that people are aware of. But yeah, for sure, I wonder if this could be a sort of a thin end of a wedge of perhaps reimagining what could be possible.
Got to say, I'm finding this chat quite fascinating. I always like speaking to people who are more intelligent on subject matters than me. Hopefully you're all enjoying it at home as well. We'll be back after this little break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right then, just before we crack on, let's hear a little bit from our resident EFL expert and someone you'll be familiar with here on this podcast feed. It's George Ellick. Here's his thoughts on the 3 p.m. blackout.
I can definitely understand why people are frustrated that they can't watch Cristiano Ronaldo's second debut for Manchester United on Saturday, but it's nothing really more than an inconvenience, and it's not an important issue in the grand scheme of things. However, for EFL clubs and non-league clubs to lose their matchday revenue is massive. It is crucially important, and to argue in favour of getting rid of the blackout is effectively saying that Premier League clubs and their fans matter more than those at a lower ebb. And if anything, we need to move further to protect EFL clubs and non-league clubs. Manchester United do not matter more than Barrow. There is no question at all that if the game on Saturday was televised, there would be a big chunk of fans who normally go to games in the EFL, who probably wouldn't travel, who wouldn't go on an away day across the country, who wouldn't go see their local team if they had the option of watching that game. And that has a massive impact. The idea that now it's out of date, the 3 p.m. blackout, is completely wrong. It's needed now more than ever. We've just gone through a season due to COVID where clubs who are so reliant on their matchday revenue had to play a whole season without fans and without that source of income. So to drive a further wedge between the clubs and their fan base, it just doesn't make any sense. It's so important not to give in to this idea, because at the moment the pyramid in this country is completely skewed towards Premier League clubs. We need to do what we can to make that divide smaller, not bigger. And doing this would be, you know, we've just managed to survive this crisis now without seeing any clubs going bust in the EFL. Non-league clubs have had a terrible time of it as well. This would be a disaster for so many of them.
Yeah, George Ellick there, and I completely agree with George on that and what he said about kind of protecting that and how important it is to the pyramid. I kind of couldn't agree more. I suppose not just focusing on the Ronaldo element, because I think in reality, people are so desperate to get to football games. Like I said, I don't think Ronaldo's debut is enough to pull them away. So looking at the bigger picture, Laurie, how do you think you reach a solution on this? Because I think as the game grows and becomes more global, people are still going to seek out illegal streams in order to get their fix of a 3 p.m. kickoff. So how do we reach a place where everyone's happy, I guess?
Yeah, I suppose it's just minimising the chance of piracy or the unrest. I suppose, you know, clearly there's loads of illegal streams and people, I'm sure, will be going to pubs at 3 o'clock that are managing to shut the blinds and get some, you know, stream from Greece or whatever. But I kind of feel like we should protect the democracy of English football. I think it is much more evenly spread than it is in other nations, and clearly we have issues ourselves. You know, it's not a nirvana over here where you've got you know, certainly a massive disparity in financial resources of different clubs. So that's why I kind of my instinct is to kind of protect the 3 p.m. blackout. I mean, I agree with you on the radio side of things. It's actually quite wonderful for people to tune in and hear it, you know, with their ears, and kind of they can picture the sounds and then they can watch it on Match of the Day later, you know, and see the highlights. I mean, not that also should be said that Sky will show the game pretty much in full from about 5:15. You know, they have a match choice each day, and I'm pretty sure that game will be the one selected, so people don't have to wait too long. I know it's not live, so I mean, also I suppose as we go along, maybe I was surprised. Personally, I don't know what you guys thought, but the comments were very much against the 3 p.m. backout. It felt like on The Athletic, you had quite a few people that were arguing for it to sustain, but it felt like the majority were sort of saying this is an archaic rule. We should be able to watch football when we want. And I don't know if that's because, you know, we've got a lot of international subscribers where that is their only way to watch the game. So they just feel like it is a bit odd, even though that obviously they will be able to watch it. You know, in America, the irony being that everywhere else in the world, yeah, they can watch this apart from Cuba and North Korea.
Dan, do you think maybe it's their comments are because they are fans of a big club that maybe, you know, never been in the Football League, so they're maybe a bit out of touch? I don't know.
Because I'm just being completely selfish this weekend, so I'm not going. Villa are playing at Chelsea 5:30 on Saturday. I'm not going this weekend, so I'm going to be at home. I would like the option to be able to watch that 3 p.m. game, because I'm not someone who's going to go to a lower league ground anyway, so I'm not. Like, it's not taking me away from doing that, because I wouldn't do it anyway. Just, you see what I mean? There'll be people who just want to watch it selfishly. You know, if we could get rid of the blackout for one weekend, I'd be all for that.
What do you think is the answer, though? Because I basically didn't answer your question there, Flo, did I?
Well, yeah, it's just it's a really interesting one. I wonder if it's you know, they would like every game, or is it just because they want to see Ronaldo so much? I think it's hard to work out where they necessarily don't see why it's so important. And I think George puts it really well, why it is so crucial that this exists. But at the same time, Dan's point about if you're a United fan, and I think Sean Harvey mentions that in the piece, would you actually be weighing up whether to go to watch Salford City or staying at home to watch Manchester United? I personally think that, a bit like Dan, if you were a Salford City fan, you would go and pay to watch Salford City because you want to go to football. And that's only increased because of the pandemic. Like, at QPR, my club, people are literally fighting over tickets to go to Reading away. This is like, you know, this is peak hysteria of being at football matches. So, yeah, it's a really intriguing one. But I wonder why people are so maybe out of touch seems harsh, because, you know, obviously people understand the reality of the football pyramid, but I wonder why they just think Article 48 is so archaic. I mean, because I think you can still see its purpose even in 2021.
Yeah, I guess the other thing as well, that again, I'm just thinking out loud here, I've gone completely off script this whole podcast. You're enabling something that's bad about football to happen this weekend now, because ticket touts and people shifting tickets for thousands of pounds because they're taking advantage of the fact that nobody can actually see this game, unless you're a Manchester United fan or a Newcastle fan, with a ticket. So there's also that aspect of it as well, that, you know, other people are profiting off this.
I wonder, though, how many people will buy a ticket for that, for an extravagant amount of money. I mean, I know people that are going.
You'd have to be like an insane Ronaldo fan, surely, to do that.
I think this is such a unique set of circumstances that, yeah, there's that, you know, just this one thing dictate what the general sort of rule should be, you know, at all times. I know, like I say, I know a lot of people that go in and they will not give up their ticket for any amount of money.
No.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of high proportion of season ticket holders that go to Old Trafford. So the kind of, I wonder just how many tickets, and listen, we'll see. I'll maybe try and ask people at the game, you know, I'm sure they won't tell me if they've bought off a ticket out, but you know, they might be able to do a bit of anecdotal evidence when we get there. But you are right, Dan. It's, you don't want to see tickets being sold for that amount of money. It's not right. But I guess I would say if somebody's, you know, willing to pay that amount of money, you'd think that they have that amount of money to spend, and I guess it's up to them a little bit if they want to go down that route. I mean, maybe I'm reading that all wrong.
Well, are the comments on the article and in general, is that symptomatic of the growing gap between the Premier League and the EFL? I mean, that's the kind of the reality, isn't it? Is that at one point something's got to give, and although this really protects the Premier League financially, it's still going to come up in every single conversation around TV, new TV deals. So it's not going away. And with the Super League and the support around financial support around the pandemic and things like that, and the Big Six and all that kind of conversation, this isn't going away. We're just going to be talking about this when the new TV rights deal comes up, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, Sean Harvey said that every time, you know, the new EFL deal had to get fixed, that was basically when it would come up, you know, and generally it was always people were quite happy with the balance. I mean, more matches now are shown live than not, you know, in the Premier League, for example. So there is a lot of football being shown. I suppose it is just, it feels different to other leagues where literally you could watch every game, can't you? I think certainly in football and other sports as well, you know, NFL, NBA. And I guess for a lot of people, certainly our subscribers and around the world, they'll just think it's just odd. It's just a curiosity. Why would you not show something that everyone wants to watch? So yeah, for sure, it'll come up time after time. I mean, you know, TV companies want to put cameras in dressing rooms, don't they? And you know, you've got the tunnel seats now at Man City and Spurs where people can get a up close view of the action. So it's only going one way, but it'd just be interesting to see how long there is a resistance to it. And you know, and I guess money talks ultimately, you know, it'll be a financial equation that it comes down to.
Is that your conclusion then before we let you go, Laura? That sounded like a nice summary of the situation.
I feel like we're leaving
with more questions, aren't we all? We're leaving more questions than answers on this podcast.
We've solved absolutely nothing. So essentially the last half an hour has been pretty pointless, but I've enjoyed the chat. I think my conclusion is that I think it's the right thing, the blackout. But I think they should have an exemption for this weekend. That's the best way I can put it. Every now and again, you should have an exemption if something special crops up, and I feel like this would be one of those times.
Yeah, I think you need to adapt, and I think the pandemic showed that perfectly, that you do need to adapt. I think what the pandemic showed as well is, I hate this, I think it's a bit of a cliche term, but you know, football is nothing without fans. And I think we've proved both those things. We've proved that people are still desperate to go to football games unless they support Arsenal. And I think that's important. And I think you could have a good balance. And I think, although maybe Sean Harvey and others are reluctant to open Pandora's box, I think it would be a good test to see if that's true, if giving more access and more coverage would lead to a massive decline. Because obviously during the pandemic, people couldn't go to games, so we didn't know that answer. But it would be interesting to see how impactful it would be. Because I'm still for it, but I do think you're going to have to adapt to get with the modern football fan.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, Laura, it's been great to talk to you, even though we've solved absolutely nothing. So I'll let you crack on with your day, probably being Carl Anker's worst enemy now, I would imagine. But yeah, enjoy the game on Saturday. I hope it's a good one for you.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me on.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Just before we leave, then, let's point you in the direction of a few other great stories going on The Athletic at the moment. Flo, have you been enjoying anything?
Yeah, really good Jack Pitbrook piece about England. I think, you know, the evolution of England over the past year has just been so impressive. And he kind of touches on the fact that there are no pointless games now. Southgate's really kind of built a team that loves to win, and it's so enjoyable to watch. And I don't think we've had that, you know, in terms of qualifiers and friendlies for a very long time. In every single game now you want to tune in for. And I think Jack kind of goes into that really well in his piece.
Yeah, great writer, Jack, great guy. There's another article actually that fits in quite nicely with what we've been talking about today, and that's the importance of match-going fans. It's a piece by senior writer and long-suffering Newcastle United supporter George Colkin, and it's called This Is What Football Sounds Like, and there's actually an accompanying podcast as well over on the Pod on the Tyne podcast feed from the journey there to the ride home afterwards. I haven't listened to it myself yet, but I've heard George do stuff like this before, and he's a very, very funny guy and very good to listen to. So yeah, George has set out to capture the sound of football from the fans' perspective, and this is a little bit of a teaser of what it sounds like.
What does football sound like? Football should sound like people.
How are you? Nice to see you.
Yeah, good, yeah.
You look good.
That small little bit of casual friendship and intimacy that's built up over the years with people just waving. Go on.
It should sound like your soul shaking.
That noise is something unique. Universal collective joy.
It sounds like this.
Remember, you can read all the great stuff on The Athletic at the moment, plus Laurie's excellent piece on a 3pm blackout and much, much more for just £3.33 a month at the moment. To do that and take advantage of the offer, just head to theathletic.com/footballpod. So I think that does us for today's episode of The Football Show on The Athletic. Thanks to Flo, and thanks again to Laurie Whitwell for chatting to us today. Thanks a lot as well for listening. Remember to hit follow and leave us a review if you're feeling generous, and keep an eye out for tomorrow's episode on this podcast feed. Have a great day.
The Athletic.